Having heard all that, do you think that internet blowhard and self-promoting Andrew Tate represents what a real man is? Or do you think that maybe sweet, biblical man of faith, Abraham, represents what true manhood is all about? Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. We're going to dive right into today's topic about Abe versus Andrew Tate, but I'm just going to ask you one question, Mark. We are in the window of time, in the moving window when it is tax season. My question is, did taxes play into your world? I know that probably I'm guessing that people call you a lot during this season. Go give me that form. Give me those numbers. Give me that data. Are you just feeding people left and right little bits of information?
That's it. I'm maybe 40 seconds before we started podcasting, I was helping someone discover their cost basis in shares of Coca-Cola that were purchased in the 1960s by their grandparents.
Wow, that is cool.
Those types of requests come up, and of course the accountant was like, my records show that you purchased these 6 months ago. I'm like, nope, it's going to be much, much longer term holding than that. But there's little things that come up, and then there's the old, hey, my accountant said I should do this. And I go, I've been telling you that for 3 years. Yeah. But, you know, I try to be gracious and just say that your accountant's a genius. I get a lot of those calls too.
Yeah, yeah. Do you betray any confidences by telling us what the cost basis was for Coca-Cola in the 60s?
I don't think it's a betrayal at all. I'm going to tell you the share price of Coca-Cola in 1965.
Yeah.
I'll tell you today, it's right now, this moment as we record, it's $69.21 a share.
Okay.
In 1965, that was 9 pennies for a share of Coke.
Wow.
So grandma made a good investment, sounds like.
And I wonder, has it split since then?
I'm sure it has. I'd have to go back and look. I think this is actually adjusted for splits, but...
9 pennies.
You could say it was a good return.
That's really fun. I want to jump into this topic. What is to be the model for us of what being a man is all about? When I was coming up as a young man, I lived in a place, which I think is probably familiar to a lot of people, where a kind, sweet, and single Jesus and interchangeably Paul were presented as, this is what the kind of man that you want to be. Now, I know that Christ-likeness is the end, that from a character standpoint, of course, Jesus is what it's all about. But when you think of a lifestyle, living as a nomad with nowhere to lay your head in ancient Israel, it's not exactly aspirational. It's not exactly not easily understandable. How do I put myself in his shoes? How do I live that lifestyle? I don't think that Jesus was trying to do that, that he was trying to say, live the kind of life I live. I don't think Paul was saying that either. What you need to do is to be a missionary to the Gentiles the way that I am. I think that those guys would have said, there's another reference point for the way to live. Now, cut to today. I'll throw this question to you, Mark. I see, I don't have any direct access to this character named Andrew Tate, but I know that he represents some kind of modern dude bro masculinity to a lot of teenagers and young men. And I don't have a lot of direct access, but I have a lot of people making reference to this guy and referring to him as, you know, at least the whipping boy for everything that we think about what being a blowhard right winger is. How does Andrew Tate enter your world?
I had to do a little homework for this episode.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't really, I'm probably like you. I have heard his name a bunch. He's been involved in some serious allegations of gross conduct recently.
Yes.
Probably the most commonplace I hear his name is Jeremy Pryor making tweets about him.
Oh, there you go.
But I think when you talk about masculinity influencers, we've even talked here about these secular dudes who play in that I'm going to make you a man space.
Yes.
On social media. We have talked about inside of the church. There's this strand of like kind of masculinity pseudo pastor online personality that likes to kind of speak to the downtrodden American male who has had a real rough go of it, I would say, truthfully,
yeah,
in the past decade or so, and say, we've got the solution, and it's for you to think about yourself and to take back your power. And they like to use some of the words we use. So like patriarchy,
right?
Commonly used word. We use that word too. We
right.
mean something totally different.
Yeah.
Than Andrew Tate or than all the other kind of copies, whether or not they try to use the name of Jesus or not in their grift. We mean something different by that. So it's a confusing space. It's, I think so many guys, the one thing we know for sure, whether it's Jordan Peterson, who we would both say, hey, he's got some good ideas.
Yeah.
Or somebody that's pretty fully detestable like Andrew Tate, the clear thing to me is that these guys are touching a nerve that there are American, maybe global men are looking for something that they're not getting from the traditional channels. And when you start talking like these guys talk, people listen.
Yeah, for sure. I'm using Andrew Tate as a stand-in for just like the modern man. What is the modern picture and who are we looking to be our models? It's for sure that God made young men to want to have models and examples to look up to have role models, if you will. That's God's intention. And when a young man's looking around for who will be the stand-in person for me, and I'll insert, and there's not a dad to take that place, because I think in God's economy, that's who's supposed to take that place. But for so many young men right now, dad is not a workable model. Then they go ranging around, who can we find? And somebody like Andrew Tate stands up and says unabashedly, I will be the stand-in father for you. I will tell you how to live. And a lot of people listen to him. So we've got two opponents here. We got Abraham and Andrew Tate, and I'm going to evaluate them in seven categories, and we'll just see who lines up. How do they match up? Who should be the champion? Are you interested in this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Everyone now indulge Stephen's gimmick. It is Abraham versus Andrew Tate. Yes.
And we need this in our life because you and I have both abandoned the NBA. So there will
right.
be no, after their terrible Luka trade, which we won't be hashing out now. So
no, the trade which shall not be mentioned.
We are stuck now with getting our sports jollies from things like Abraham versus Andrew Tate. Cage match. Here
yeah,
we go.
That's right. That's what this is. This is a cage match. Biblical character versus internet Yahoo. Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to lay out the cases. I'm going to let you decide who has the edge in each of these categories, okay? Category one, the easiest scorecard for men on the planet, wealth. Let's just talk about wealth, okay? Let's talk about Andrew Tate. Andrew Tate has a little online kind of club that you can join. He calls it Hustler University. It's $50 a month to join his little thing. He has a kind of mastermind group, which he calls the War Room. It's $8,000 a year. There are wildly varying reports on his wealth, but according to legal documents in a court case in Romania, he's been arrested in a couple places. We'll mention that later. In those court documents, his personal net worth was $12 million. Now, all of his companies, et cetera, and other holdings might be worth upwards of $100 million. That's unknown, but he's worth, according to these court documents, $12 million, okay? So he's not worrying about where lunch is going to come from. Also not like the richest man on earth, okay? Abraham, let's contrast him to Abraham. Abraham's wealth, as we read about him in the Bible, a really reliable old book, is that his wealth was primarily in cattle. Now, it's hard to measure when the Bible says about Abraham, he was very wealthy in sheep and cattle. But here's what we do know. His wealth in livestock was so much that when he looked over the Jordan River Valley with his nephew Lot, and by the way, the Jordan River Valley is 65 miles long and 6 miles wide, and he couldn't share that space with Lot. So that's a data point. And couple that with the size of his household, which we'll get to later, and the fact that he was treated as an equal by kings and pharaohs, very unusual. And we could easily put Abraham's wealth modern day into the billions. There's my case. What do you say?
I'm just looking at the size of Abraham's ranch.
Yeah.
How big is the King Ranch?
Great question. Let's get our producer to call that one up live.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the biggest ranch in the world. Abraham wasn't quite there, but he was at, it says 250,000 acres when I do the math on that conversion. So we're talking, this man could raise most of the cattle to feed the state of Texas in his territory. I think you're probably right. We're talking a multi-billionaire for sure.
Yes, sir.
And can I just say that when I was doing my homework on Andrew Tate, the dude has this horrific, you know, I was into the watches. We've talked about productive side hustle of watches.
Okay, go on.
He has a Patek Philippe, which is a very fancy watch brand. And these really, really high-end watches that are like over $100,000 a piece, they are very valuable and they tend to gain in value. You know what you can do to ruin the value of a high-end watch?
No.
You crust it in diamonds, and those actual real diamonds reduce the value of the watch because people who actually care about such things go, this is tacky. And it's just worth the metal that it's made out of and the diamonds. And so, sure enough, gaudy, flashy Andrew Tate has destroyed his valuable watch by crusting it with diamonds. And I guess he wants to be a rapper or something. I just have to throw that in because the guy doesn't exactly carry himself like someone who knows how to steward wealth.
Fair. Who gets the edge on wealth?
We're going to go with this round for Abraham. And
okay,
it's a 10-8. He got a knockdown on this one.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay, so let me just contextualize for the young man again. Think of a hero. Who do you want to become? Who do you think, this guy knows how to live well? I will trim my sails in a way that I might follow his path. Think of the multi-billionaire. That's not a bad way to trend. Okay. It's category two, and some of these categories I'm just lifting directly out of what would Andrew Tate say are his strong suits. Okay, so my second one is warlord status. So Andrew Tate has referred to himself as a warlord before. I assume that's because he was an MMA fighter at one point. He had an 11-year kickboxing career, and that's about all I can say for him as a warlord. Abraham, I found out something really interesting this week, and that is that in the apocryphal book of Jubilees, it says, this is an extra biblical source, but it says that Abraham as a young man hunted giants. That was That was his, that was one of his hobbies as a young man. Now we know that later in life, he was probably 80 or thereafter. He went to war to rescue his nephew Lot and others that were dragged into servitude by four different kings. He was wildly outnumbered. You ever heard of this movie 300 about the Spartans?
Oh, have I ever.
Okay. Well, this was that kind of a scenario. There were 319 men in Abraham's army. He went against the armies of four kings, and they won. He came away with the nephew. He was successful. Not bad at all. This is what I can say about Abraham. Maybe one of the coolest things about Abraham was that he did not have a life of war, that he wasn't running around picking fights everywhere. But when it was time to fight, he's going to hurt you bad.
He had a can. He could open a can on you. I think one of my favorite indicators of Abraham's military power is actually not a war. It's when he goes to bury Sarah. He negotiated, it says, with the Hittites as an equal. I don't think we catch that, but that's like if I was like so wealthy and militarily threatening that I could go over to Europe and the Parrot family, people are like, we've heard of this family. You have to be careful. And I could go, hey, Belgium, you need to deal with me and my family. And they go, we're going to treat you as if you were France right now because you're so powerful. You're like a whole country. So this guy was no joke, and people feared him.
Okay. Compare the lifetime of Abe's tough guy status and Andrew Tate's 11-year kickboxing career. What do you say?
Are we scoring these rounds again? Because it's another 10-8. Abraham gets multiple knockdowns on this round. It's almost insulting to him that he's being put up against this jackwagon. But
I love it. That's great. Great. Now, category three, reputation. So Andrew Tate, here's the things. I got to throw this out. He has 10 million followers on X. So if there's young moms out there, I want you to know that this guy is not a nobody. He's got 10 million followers on X. His videos collectively, if you go YouTube, TikTok, whatever, his videos have been viewed collectively 11.5 billion times. That's a lot of moments of people meditating on this guy's worldview, his presumed insights, etc. We have to throw into the ledger this as well with his reputation. He is distrusted by entire governments because of his negative influence on young men. He's been deplatformed on X and Instagram and Facebook for dehumanizing and violence-inciting speech. He's been arrested in both Romania and Great Britain for trafficking and other not nice crimes. Also, there are open criminal investigations against him in the United States. So that is his reputation. Very famous, very problematic. Abraham, let's talk about his reputation. He is portrayed, you already made reference to this, as having ready access to Philistine kings and Egyptian pharaohs. Now, just think for a second. As a wandering tent-living herdsman, this would be unheard of. That you're exactly right, saying he was basically given nation status. He was definitely the leader of his household. We're talking about reputation again. This giant household, he was respected in his entire region to the point where people would come to him and just offer, maybe we could get into a treaty together. What could we give you so that there would be peace between us? And he went on, speaking of reputation, to be a cornerstone of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. He's a revered hero to most of this planet's religious people. I think that's pretty good on reputation.
I did a quick search, and I think that we're going to give Abraham the nod here on this round, but it's a 10-9 round. It's not quite as big of a knockout,
okay,
because if we just look at people in the entire, in Abraham's known world, the people that he might have come across in all of his travels, it's like 10 to 15 million. And Andrew Tate evidently can just tweet at 10 to 10 million people every day. And so I don't think Tate has the influence or the positive reputation, but he at least is kind of known by a lot of people. Abraham clearly moved the history of the world forever, but we're just giving him a solid victorious round here, not a beatdown round.
I like that. So Tate, more famous in his own time, we might be able to project 3,000 years from now, Tate probably won't have global influence. Probably.
I hope not.
Okay. Category four. We go right into boldly. Category four. This is worrying when we go into category four. For Abraham fans, this category is gonna make you worried. Ready? The category is treatment of women. Okay. Ooh. All right. I'm gonna start with Abraham this time. Abraham pretended that Sarah wasn't his wife. Then he sells her as a concubine, and he does it twice. Does it twice. Ooh, that's ouch. That's a lick on you, bro. Then, at his wife's insistence, took Hagar as a concubine. That's not great also. But before you start thinking, well, his wife probably hated his guts because he was so awful to her. He did some underhanded things, but the Bible describes their relationship as being really wonderful. First Peter talks about how she trusts in him. The end of the story, you mentioned her her burial. Really kind of cool is that in Ephron, the only piece of land that we know of Abraham buying in his whole life, he was a herdsman, he moved around, but he bought a piece of land for Sarah's burial. And that was unusual in the day. He didn't leave her out in the desert. He bought a piece of land. That would have communicated in the day love and devotion. He honored her in death. And many Jews are one of our financial heroes around here is the good rabbi Daniel Lappin, who believes that Proverbs 31 is Abraham's eulogy of Sarah. And so there's a lot of heartwarming kind of speech, especially right at the end of that chapter, that would have been Abraham's heart towards Sarah. So it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag for our boy Abe. Let's talk about Andrew Tate for a second. It's not good.
What do you mean? He loves women, right?
In a way. In a way, his treatment of women is troubling. He's been arrested, as I said, in two separate nations, and criminal investigations have been open in a third. The reason that he's been arrested and deplatformed, et cetera, is because he is a self-described misogynist. I'm going to quote him directly, hands over the ears of the little ones. He says, women are inferior and morally deficient and deserve to be abused. And all of the crimes that he's accused of stem from that belief. And people pay him by the boatload to train him in this kind of thinking. So he's not just personally terrible with the fairer sex, the weaker partner, but he goes out of his way to proliferate his thinking to anyone that will listen to him. I find that doubly reprehensible. So what do you say? Treatment of women.
There's this thing that's happening right now, and I won't in any way put these two guys on the same level, but Andrew Tate and Elon Musk are two guys who don't seem to know Jesus, but are out there saying, it's so important for you guys to have a whole bunch of kids. And Andrew Tate has even talked about...
Don't get ahead of us now, Mark. Oh,
see, I should have read your notes. But anyways, the fact is, this guy has not just made mistakes, which you, like you said, our boy Abraham, he made some pretty stupid
mistakes. He made a couple of mistakes.
And when we read Genesis as a family earlier in the year, I just remember my kids going, wait, we already read this chapter. And I go, no, we didn't.
Different story.
He's doing it again. The same thing. But Abraham at least seemed to, for the most part, catch on that the Lord's way was going to be a more successful long-term plan, and that included when it came to his marriage situation and the way that he viewed his multi-generational family. Andrew Tate, he has made his sin into his biggest bragging point. So I'm going to give this round again to Abraham, who honestly, it's starting to look like it's going to be difficult for Tate to catch up in this.
Oh, shoot. Well, there's nothing to be done except to plod onward. I mean, we've got two more categories, one of which you started to pull it open just a little bit.
Yeah, like for the YouTube.
Steamed the edge of the envelope to get it open a little bit.
For the audience that's just audio only, you didn't see the panic in Steven's eyes when I started to go somewhere where he was about to go. I know that feeling. So I'm going to let you cook. Why don't you go ahead?
The category six is family building. Family building. Tate reports having somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 kids. He says offhandedly that he wants 20. One of the things that got me interested in this whole topic at all was that a friend of mine told me that he was reported as having said that he wanted 100 kids. And so I couldn't find that quote, but I did find him saying that he wants 20. And he also says that this will require many women to accomplish. So he's not troubled by, a one man for one woman for life. He's not worried about that. So his kids, to say the least, are dispersed. So he's not really building a family. He just sort of wants to have a lot of kids. Doesn't need to live with them. That might hinder his awesome diamond-encrusted watch lifestyle where you wear a suit with no shirt under it. That could impinge on that if he's having to, do sippy cups and stuff. So are his kids loved and trained? I can't really say that. I can say that he is living for himself. I don't know how much time he has for the training of children. He is complimentary of his father, who used to abuse him at his leisure. He said the 4 a.m. beating would be normal. And he never remembers being affirmed, but he remembers the expectations being very high. And his father would say, I'm not worried about you being happy. I want you to be exceptional. That's kind of the world that he comes from. Now let's talk about Abe. Abe has done well. He went into senior citizenry with no children at all. And one thing I want to say about our boy Abraham is that he grabbed the king of the universe, the one whose name is high and holy, the God of the angel armies, he more or less grabbed him by the lapels and said, you must give me a son, and would repeatedly say that to the Lord, held him to it. And God, we've gone over this before, God says, I'm going to give you this and this blessing. And Abraham goes, yeah, thanks a lot. Because the way things work right now is my chief servants are going to be taking all of my stuff when I die. That's not acceptable to me, God. So he pushed and pushed and prayed and plotted. He didn't plot against God. He plotted onward like, I'm not going to give up in prayer. And he was given a son. Now, the son part is important because God made a promise to him early on. Your children are going to outnumber the stars that you can count in the sky. So here's what happened to him. When we can jump from the moment when he had a son to being in his 80s, when we know that he had in his household, among all the people that were on his downline, children, servants, families of servants, everybody that would have said, you are the father of our family. You're the boss of our world. The grown men in that household numbered 318. That's the army that he took to go get Lot. So how many people was that total? 1,000 maybe in his household, what would have been considered his household that he's in charge of? His family line expanded dramatically under Jacob, who had 12 sons and settled Canaan into the tribes that we know, the tribes of Israel. God did fulfill his promises. And I even consider, when I think of him as the family builder, I have to throw in there the truth of Romans 11, which is that if we are children of faith, we are also on his spiritual downline. So me, not a Jew, I'm Gentile blood, but I'm counted as one of his descendants by faith. So the largest family ever? Yes, the largest family ever. I feel that Abraham did well as a family builder.
I think that the key to what you're saying is that he was a family builder. Andrew Tate seems to think there's some value or like nobility in spreading your genetic material. And that's totally different. I don't know if you know, but the person that's generally held up as this is the guy who has been the most successful at creating offspring is not Abraham. It's our boy, one of the more evil humans ever to live. Yes.
Is it Genghis Khan?
You got it.
All right. I think you told me this long ago.
The cool kids say Genghis Khan.
Genghis.
But 1 in 200 humans currently alive on Earth today are related to that one guy. They have his genetic material.
Okay.
And so we don't look back at him and go, what a father. Well, you know, he just ran through most of Asia and spread his seed far and wide, and what a wonderful noble man. No, we kind of look at him and go, one of the great evil figures in the history of humankind. So I think that Tate, I don't know why he thinks this, but it's sort of what I, when I was talking earlier about Musk and Tate, they seem to think there's nobility in just fathering souls. And I'm not sure that, like, we're all for big families. We're absolutely not for some notion that it's good or manly or whatever to just father children and pat yourself on the back, I guess, that they exist, that you've sort of procreated. So I think that's so weird. I guess from Elon's perspective, I've heard him talk about it, like one of the great risks to humanity is birth rate collapse. And the math seems to say, yes, we won't have countries like South Korea in another 100 years because of what's happening with their birth rate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that the answer is just father a lot of children. I'm going to go with the answer that has proven to start and cultivate a family that is going to last until the end of the age, which is what Abe did. And for that reason, Stephen, I'm giving this round again to Abraham.
Okay, well, we are definitely reaching a point where it's just statistics at this point. It seems like our eventual winner has already been declared.
Well, Tate is going to have to knock him out at this point.
That's right.
There's no winning on the scorecard at this point.
You're right. We could have a late round knockout. Now, it looks bad because I know the seventh category. You don't, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be an uphill fight because the seventh category is faith. So here's Tate's story. Andrew Tate was raised Christian somehow based on that awful father of his. I don't know. He rejected it for atheism because he said that he wanted easier access to corruption. So atheism would help him in that, you could see. Now, in 2022, he was filmed praying at a mosque in Dubai, And so he reports conversion to Islam. And apparently Islam is happy to have him, from all reports that I hear. So this is a man who is very thin on faith and hard to pin down. We don't know where he stands. If he stands anywhere on faith, then he would probably throw his lot in with the Muslim at this standpoint, but who knows?
Could we argue, just because I want to give him a chance, I want to at least let him
please
puncher's chance here.
Come up with something.
Could we argue that Andrew Tate has an immense amount of faith in himself, that he, because if Andrew Tate is God, which is what it seems to be, that
okay, I'm going to go with you on this. Keep going.
He seems to be so self-obsessed, which is something I want to mention at the end of this episode, that I'm saying this guy has got to have a lot of faith, because he's been exposed in some way, it sounds like, to the God of the universe. And he is so full of faith that he would say, I am a bigger man than the creator God. So wow. That to me is a wild bet that he's making.
It is something to consider. We're gonna make a note of that.
Okay.
That if he is his God, then he is very devoted to his God. So that's fair.
This is gonna be problematic for him though when Abraham has that knife and he's ready to take out his only promised son. So let's hear Abraham's.
It's also going to be problematic when he stands before the king of the universe, who is the God. So that has
even bigger implications than this celebrity death match.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to make the case very simple. Genesis 15:6 says about Abraham, he believed God, and that faith was counted as righteousness. James 2:23 refers to Abraham as a friend of God. I cannot imagine that phrase. We're talking about the invisible, eternal God of everything that there has ever been. And Abraham was his friend? Here's something that you might never have considered before that I think is profound. Paul says in Romans 4 that Abraham's faith, which was, again, let's define it, it's belief that justifies apart from works. That was Abraham's kind of faith. I don't know that we had ever seen that on the planet before, but that's what came out of Abraham, was belief that justified him apart from anything, any dumb thing he ever did. Belief that justified apart from works. God drew a circle around that man's faith and said, that will be the normative pattern of faith for everybody that follows me for the rest of time. That guy's faith was obedient to the point of killing, being willing to kill this child of promise. It was future-based. He demonstrated, I will leave my homeland and not know what's next. It was courageous, but he went to fight to rescue Lot. It was humble and generous. He deferred land to Lot. He was honoring. He paid tithes to Melchizedek, this mysterious king that came out of nowhere. He called on the name of Jehovah, the one true Elohim, the one true God, and he entrusted his life to him in covenant relationship. His faith became the wellspring of everything that came after it, leading even into the Messiah. And I'll say again, I am living my life on the shoulders of that giant. I'm hoping, I'm using language from Romans 11 here. My great hope and trust is that I am being grafted into the tree for which he was the human root. Now, there was a root before eternity in Christ himself. And Jesus would say, I'm David's father, and he's the one that looked forward to me, and I was also the one that came before him. So that's all true. But from a human standpoint, Abraham is number one. And so young men listening to this, this is the kind of faith that God recognizes. It's what he rewards. It's what he invites you into. And having this kind of Abrahamic faith is what we're all hoping toward. He is the human faith hero that we all want to be like. I remember back to my introduction, I remember thinking sometimes, I don't know what kind of an example Jesus is to me. It was an ignorance, but I remember thinking that as a young man, because isn't he Superman? Wasn't he born on a distant planet? Didn't he have God as his father? Well, didn't he have like supernatural abilities falling out of him all the time? I could argue those points now, but it's what I thought as a child. But we see Abraham. This is just a regular old dude from nowhere. His parents were idol worshipers. He came from a nothing idolatrous town, and yet he followed God, and his faith was considered as righteousness. This is the kind of faith we're all after.
That's right. And it's just so interesting, like these stories that we heard. You talked about felt bored Abraham when we were little kids in Sunday school. They're still really, really powerful when it comes to faith. There's a reason that the author of Hebrews goes back to Abraham and says, this is your model. You know, this week, actually, Stephen, we're doing faith in the critical skills class. So we're learning about faith in the group that we're doing here. And I was just talking to one of my daughters. She's 11 years old. And we were talking about faith, and the first thing that came to her mind was, it's kind of like when Abraham was willing to take out his only son, even though it was completely sure that if he did that, it would end the thing God had promised him. And so she's heard that story 20 times, and I've heard it 1,000, and it was still just powerful for us to stop and think about this one guy and this one act of faith, and he had a whole bunch of those over the span of his life.
Yes.
So there's a reason why this podcast is named after him, and why he is considered the father of this entire story that God wrote through the family of Abraham. So yeah, I can't get enough of hearing about and remembering Abraham and his faith.
Yes. So just to put a bow on the gimmick, in all of these seven categories, and again, I tried to think of categories where Andrew Tate would think of himself as a big success. In all seven of these categories, Abraham is the man. He not only kind of beats him by a judge's count, but he looms over him like Muhammad Ali swinging his fist, roaring down at the dude laying on the mat in front of him. Abraham is the man that all young men should look to as an example in wealth building, faith building, courage, and family building. We do need heroes. We do need examples. And the ancient ones are the best ones. I was thinking about the verse that says, stand at the crossroads and look and ask for the ancient paths. Here's the ancient path. Follow this man. God gave him to us as a reference for what success looks like. It's not all holy. It's not all pure. He had mishaps. He wasn't the perfect husband, for instance. I'm sure he wasn't the perfect father. He certainly wasn't to Ishmael. And yet, he is the example for a young man. So, yes, what you said, that's why we want to lash ourselves to him. Jesus is the example when it comes to faith and love. And having an intimate relationship with the Father, I mean, we said that Abraham was a friend of God's. Well, Jesus was God, and he said, I and the Father are one. But when it comes to leading a family, building a life of success, Abraham is the model. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, can I take us out with one paragraph from our friend Old Grog? You mentioned this book on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Our friends over at the Viceroy Project have written a book called On Ruling, and they sent me a few of them. Should we give a copy of this book away to a listener?
I'd love to. Like you, I have several copies. It would be a delight.
Well, if you're listening to this, you don't have to be on any particular platform, but what I do know is that YouTube and Spotify allow comments. And so if you will go on those platforms, YouTube is probably the easiest one, make a comment and make sure you're following the channel. We're going to pick one person, and we're going to contact you and send you a copy of On Ruling by one of our favorite authors. His name is Old Grog. But let's hear from Old Grog. It says, even in the recent surge in masculinity, the myriad of podcasts, books, elk-eating personalities, testosterone clinics, MMA, YouTube phenoms, and bro culture high-fivers, tells me that men are grasping for something more raw, more real, more thrilling than the typical domestic husband and father experience can offer. The problem with all of this is that the focus is zeroed in on the self, self-actualization, self-improvement. The truth is, men perform best when we are spent in honorable service to something higher than ourselves. Only by fighting like maniacs, laying down our lives, and pushing ourselves to the brink for the king can we enjoy the euphoria, the pulse-pounding thrill of radical obedience. Only when we see scores of other lives transformed by our own self-sacrifice, the fruitful yield on the backside of our own small deaths, can we experience true camaraderie with other men. That is the moment when men become alive and connect to their value, purpose, and meaning. The king's men are looking for a good fight. We just often don't know where one is to be found. And the reason I wanted to read this is because I think that at the core, what we saw in Abraham through almost every single category you went through was a willing to employ all his skills and his masculine virtues on behalf of something much bigger than himself and ultimately in service of the king of the universe. And what we see in a guy like Andrew Tate or any of the other masculinity influencers is employing their, frankly, palsied, shriveled little version of masculinity. Whatever they've got, they're bringing it all to bear in service of themselves. And that is a fool's errand and a loser's game. So I think there's other brothers thinking about this stuff the way that we are. But at the end of the day, we just want to encourage you to look to the biblical patriarch Abraham or many of the other heroes of the faith that we have that will show you not just how to be good at being a man, but how to employ masculinity in service of the king. That's what we're after.